There you go.
Lex, man. Lex is something else.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
What you really want inside can only come from you.
tell people
who you're gonna turn to next.
Tell me, people, you gotta take a look at yourself. Yeah, get some people.
Where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
Me what your life is?
What's with your life?
Running like a rare disease.
Running like a rare disease. Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself. Yeah.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe.
We pour this libation
to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement, Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything was well with you today. Hope you had a good weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you want to do, need do, should do, must do, can do, will do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But if it wasn't, I know you got it done anyway. Because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is. You don't procrastinate. No, you don't put nothing off. You handle your business, and we love you for it. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to the archives by going to timeforanawakening.com. And on the front page, look for the podcast. Click on that. And once you click on that, you'll see African Perspectives. And you'll see programs that are, click on that. Then you'll see programs that are dated and titled. Thanks to my good brother, Brother Quake, who appreciate him. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. My program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Immediately following this program on Mondays and Wednesday. Yes, that's right, today. Will be the Black People Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones from 1 to 3 on Monday and Wednesday. The Black People Matrix. Monday evening, all times I give are Eastern times. Monday evening from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, Public Affairs Programming out of Philadelphia, followed by Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. And then Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy from 7 p.m. And then if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, you know what time it is? That's right, brothers and sisters. It is time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Fridays at 8 p.m. On Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. No, that's not me. It's Sister POC. That's right. Her program on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. is Revive. And then Sunday evening, once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 7 p.m. Every Monday through Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m., it's the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media, Monday through Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is We Buy Black. You can get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. And if you are in the Atlanta area, they have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall. So you can check out WeBuyBlack in the Greenbrier Mall and the products that they have. WeBuyBlack.com. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Brother Bomani Tayemba, Africa for the Africans. And Brother Bomani is preparing to once again take our people to the motherland. He has a trip coming up in November, next month, November 22nd to December 2nd, going to Johannesburg and Cape Town, South Africa. And then December 24th to January 4th, 2020, he is going back to Ghana, West Africa. You can contact Brother Bomani at 404-931-9429, 404-931-9429, or give him a call. You can go to the website and check that out. So I suggest that you do so, because that would be, if you can make that trip, it's going to be an outstanding trip. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani 2007. Shrine of the Black Madonna. The Shrine of the Black Madonna, located in the West End here in Atlanta on Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard. And the number to call is 404-549-8676. 404-549-8676. And I tell you, the Shrine has it all. They got furniture, they got clothing, they got artwork, and of course they got books. They got the Nazgas shoes. That's right, the Gas shoes, the red, black, and green shoes. They also have Kwanzaa kit. Kwanzaa's coming up. You probably need some candles. You better check out the Shrine right now. They probably got some candles for you. They also have an African Holocaust Museum, but they also have a class every Saturday. An African history class of Know Thyself, every Saturday, free and open to the public from 1:30 to 3:30. But if you can't make that, but you want the information, you can also order the multimedia library from the Shrine. They had 4.5 terabytes of African enlightenment, but they've increased that. They now have 7 terabytes of African enlightenment. So I'm telling you, brothers and sisters, if you want to have over 15,000 audio files and 15,000 images, over 40,000 videos, over 2,000 books, you need to check out the Shrine of the Black Madonna and the History African History Club and the Multimedia Library. Another bookstore we promote is the Meddu Bookstore. The Meddu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. In fact, it's located right next to the kiosk of We Buy Black. So if you're checking out We Buy Black, the Meddu Bookstore is right there. And they've been here for years. In fact, it says it's been celebrating 28 years in business. Outstanding. The number to call, 404-346-3263. And if they don't have the book that you want or are looking for, believe me, they'll get it. Another bookstore we promote here is the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, my good brother Kazimde Ajamu. The number to call to my good brother is 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. And he has the red, black, and green shoes. He has books, and just the same applies. If he doesn't have the book that you're looking for at the time, believe me, he'll order it and he'll get it for you. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, or as we like to say, cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. And they have a Thursday night broadcast on Blog Talk every Thursday night at 9 p.m. The number to call is 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789. The Us Lifting Us Thursday night broadcast, Ulu. The Ackerman Institute. Brother Baba Baruti and Sister Ya Baruti consistently need the help to produce the kind of men and women our community so desperately needs. And those men and women are warriors. Those men and women stand strong and tall and are protective of our community, protecting of myself as an elder, our women, our children. So we got to support Brother Baba Baruti. Make your check or money order, out to Ackerman Institute, P.O. Box 10786, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia 30310. If you want to use PayPal and Cash App, you can do that too. Sanjay Dash, Haiti. Sister Gabrielle Arrera, from Haiti. The work that she is doing in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti is phenomenal. Go online to check her out. If you feel it is, it's something that you're going to assist and contribute, please do so. Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E dash Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I .org. Sanjay dash Haiti. The Black Talk Radio Network Media Fund, Black Talk Radio Network. If you go on Black Talk Radio Network, right on that page, just scroll down a little bit onto the right side is the Media Fund. And, of course, we are part of the Black Talk Radio Network, and we're very proud to be. Black Talk Radio Network is the largest American African Native radio network in the world, podcast. Yeah. So, the Inye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. And I'm going to read a few of them here, you know, and thank all those who are listening. I'm going to read a few. I've got another thing I want to read as well. Okay. October 12th, which is my youngest daughter's birthday. It's my baby's birthday, October 12th. Put your people before yourself. Forsake individualism for peoplehood. Me for us. Individual aspirations for community aspirations. Make the sacrifices necessary to struggle for your people. Zach Kandu. Willingly or not, we all rest on shoulders. The question is, of on whose shoulders do we stand? The answer defines our loyalties, vision, and mission. Sometimes students mistakenly, blindly believe that the shoulders they stand on belong to those who systematically overworked, tortured, and murdered their ancestors. To do so is an offense against all African people. Choose wisely. For those after you will have to stand on yours. Affirm, I have chosen my ancestors' shoulders to stand on. Affirm, I have chosen my ancestors' shoulders to stand on. October 13th. An armed attacker cannot be ignored. George Jackson. One of the most dangerous myths holding our community in submissive check is that if you just do not speak about racism and just ignore its most virulent carriers, it will cease to exist. This is the life-serving fabrication of dedicated Negroes and fretful lost souls who see salvation in the power of their never spoken words. Certainly there is reason in ignoring loud but disarmed ignorance and stupidity. Dialogue with idiots confuses serious observers as to whose brain is disengaged. But to confront an armed, reasoning attacker determined to commit menticide, genocide, and spiritside against you with a shield of avoidance, flight, or measured neglect is suicidal at best. From one whose very existence depends upon your inferiorization and destruction, there is no guarantee of escape except in returning to the rage measured righteously and effectively. Affirm, I never ignore our armed attackers. Affirm, I never ignore our armed attackers. October 14th. The hunt is on. And brother, you're the prey, Curtis Mayfield. Western society destroys people. This truth is only meaningful if we know that it destroys Africans indefinitely more than others. To see this clearly, we have to understand that in a fair pluralistic society, the percentage of a group is of a total population is the rod by which they should be measured. Their percentage of the general population should be the same as or similar to the proportions in all things good and bad in the society. So if there are 20%, if they are 20% of the population, then they should be about 20% of all judges, 20% of all truck drivers, 20% of all teachers, 20% of all drug addicts, 20% of all comedians, and 20% of all entrepreneurs, and so forth and so on, in that society. Therefore, since we officially represent, they say, about 12% of this nation's population, Africans should account for somewhere between 12% of its prison population, and not the 65% that we represent. Wherever we are under European domination, we find the same racist disparity. In England, where Africans represent a mere 2% of the population, we are comprised of 16% of the inmates. In Australia, where we represent 3% of the total population, we are 85% of inmates. Unless you believe that Africans are genetically criminal, that we are born killers, thieves, and gangsters, as Europeans, because they is, the people who have manufactured this image of us historically are, you know, something is, you know, then something is dangerously wrong here, and it is. Affirm, I know there is something dangerously wrong here. Affirm, I know there is something dangerously wrong here. The Inye Sesem of daily revolutionary thought. On this day, Indigenous Peoples Day, I know that it is a day not for celebration. It's not a holiday. It's a day to reflect and to mourn the loss of life, to mourn all that happened with the coming of this day for Europeans. I was going to read what Europeans think about in terms of our captivity, our enslavement. It's a good piece, but I think that by reading that today, that would do a disservice to the indigenous people, all the many nations of indigenous people. And of course, this day also is a day of mourning for us, because this is the Maafa, this is the Infakani, this is the beginning of the Holocaust of our enslavement. So I'm going to read what I usually read sometimes around this time, and that is Kwame Nkrumah, to help us understand where we were and now where we are. In 1961, at the freedom speech, Nkrumah said, "I believe strongly and sincerely that with the deep-rooted wisdom and dignity, the innate respect for human lives, the intense humanity that is our heritage, the African culture united under one federal government will emerge not as just another world block to flaunt its wealth and strength, but as a great power whose greatness is indestructible, because it is built not on fear, envy, and suspicion, nor want at all expense of others, but founded on hope, trust, friendship, and dedicated to the good of all mankind." He later stated, "If we do not approach the problems in Africa with a common front and a common purpose, we shall be haggling and wrangling among ourselves until we are colonized again and become the trolls of a far greater colonialism than we suffered heretofore." And that is what has happened. So it brings us to Sister Marimba Ani. For us to be truly liberated, for us to be truly liberated, African people must come to know the nature of European thought and behavior in order to understand the effect the European has had on our ability to think victoriously. We must be able to separate our thoughts from European thought, so to visualize a future that is not dominated by Europe. This is a demand by an African-centered view because we are Africans. And because the future toward which Europe leads us is genocide. Rabbi Ani. So, good brothers and sisters, I am once again here with my good brother. We are still kicking it live. My good brother, Muhammad Abdullah. Good morning, brother.
Good morning, Oshi. I'm happy to be here because this is where the black people are, and this is where I feel the most safe.
I know that's right. I like that one, man. Yeah, I think I heard Renoco say that too. Yeah. So who said that first?
I heard it from Paul Mooney.
Paul Mooney?
he was in Harlem, and yeah. He said, this is where the niggas at, and this is where I feel the most safe.
Yeah. Hey, for real. We're going to get off into a number of topics. I'm not going to read that. I was going to read a piece on why Caucasians believe the issue of slavery should be put in its proper context based upon what they say, because in that article, it talks about the good that they have done. They have helped eradicate slavery around the world. You know, there's nothing better in the world than Europeans. Let them tell it, I'll tell you.
You know, when you were speaking about the original natives, the original native people of this land, it brought to mind a book that I discovered in Madison, Wisconsin, where I live, called Kill the Indian, Save the Man.
Yeah.
And alongside, parallel to our enslavement and torture and mistreatment, the native peoples, they believed because they had straight hair, if they stripped them of their culture, they could create another race of white people, as they like to call themselves. And I think the most heinous part of these people's history is that they have embedded in their theology that racism, so that if you have any belief in a higher power or creator or divine, whatever you call it, these people have made that image like themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very destructive part of what they've done since they... What was his name? The one that was lost and discovered this...
Cristobal.
Yeah.
Cristobal Colon.
Yes.
Cristobal Colon was his Italian name, because, you know, he was Italian. He was not Spanish. He got the money and the go-ahead from Ferdinand and Isabella. And that's who financed his voyage. In fact, of course, we all know now that he was not looking to come to this hemisphere. He was looking for a way around Africa to go into India for spices. And if you ever heard me talk about this, you know that they weren't looking to spice up the food. They were looking to put spices in their clothing so they wouldn't smell so damn bad. That's why they had flowers at the wedding. I mean, you know, a lot of times if you go deal with this European and you deal with his history from his infancy, from its rise and fall, because he has risen and fallen, and he will fall again. I just hope that his fall doesn't take us with him. Let his fall be his fall because of the evils, the things that he has done. Let us rise out of the ignorance, throw off the shackles of the ignorance that he has placed upon us so that we can rise as African people, regardless of whatever theologies we ever have, any other political philosophies or anything. Because first and foremost, that's where we are. Hell, they didn't enslave us because we're from any particular tribe, any particular nation, or believed in any other theology. No, your ass was black. You were African. And we're going to enslave you, you know? So, you know, this day, I'm not going to read that because I think it would do a disservice. We need to talk about the indigenous people and some other things that we might engage in conversation. And I know I'm going to talk about this, the African, the word, the spelling, because many people have asked. And so one of my good brothers with ASCAC, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization,
who kind of leads our discussion group, Brother Ed. Good, very good brother, and we had a good discussion yesterday. And always good to see Baba Kelsey. Baba Kelsey's 94 years old, sharp as a tack. Man, I'm saying, brother, 94 years old, you know, walks around real good, sharp as a tack. You probably thought he was man in his 70s, you know. But he said, Africa, the use of the spelling of Africa with a K, because I know I've been spelling it with a K for a long time. You've always seen it, and then you wonder why, you know. But they're saying, based upon the research that he did, is a reflection of a movement of African consciousness, particularly among American African intellectuals. African linguistics originally used K to indicate the C sound in the English language. The use of K reflects the original spelling in English by African linguistics. The use of a K in the spelling of Africa in the African consciousness movement therefore represents a symbolic rejection of the colonial usurpation of the African agency or authority. For many activists, the K represents an acknowledgement that Africa is not the true name of the vast continent. When one speaks of Africa, they are bringing an African-centered view to the meaning. Therefore, Africa spelled with a K represents a redefined and potentially different Africa, and also it symbolizes a coming together of African people worldwide. So let it be understood that when one speaks of Africa, and when one speaks, when one speaks of Africa, and when most Caucasians think of Africa, they are coming from two different worldviews. One view supports the African ethos, with a K, and while the other supports the European ethos. So, and that was also, got that from Marcus Garvey. So now you know, when you see Africa spelled with the letter K, a good idea in terms of us, because I mean, I loved it when I first seen it. I didn't know, you know. I knew that you could use K and C as the same kind of same sound. Like people use kitchen and so forth, you know. So
one of the things about the English language is because it's a kind of a made up language,
it's a bastardized language. You can go ahead and say it on this program. It's a bastardized language.
Just a bunch of languages thrown in, yeah. a smorgasbord of mm-hmm. borrowing from different dialects and languages. But mm-hmm. I remember the late Imam W.D. Muhammad, and Oshie, if you can respond to this. He when he came on the scene around 1975-76, not that, I mean, he was here, but in terms of his father's right. community that he inherited, he espoused the idea that, and you know, some followers of W.D. Muhammad, I don't currently self-identify as one, but I was telling a brother the other day about something a brother said there was controversy. He said, well, if the imam said it, I don't have a problem with it. But, you know, I think anybody, anything we hear, regardless of who it is, it deserves some research. So yeah. This is what he said. He said that the term Africa came from Roman conquerors.
Right.
Scipio Africanus.
Or Leo.
One was a conqueror yeah. and one was a discoverer pope. Conqueror. Yeah. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. sometimes people separate people who conquer people. Mm-hmm. But when someone comes after you, they generally not just coming after you. They want what you have either.
Right.
So separating them as both of them were conquerors. Right. One was looking to conquer people. One wanted to take the resources.
Well, Leo Africanus was a pope. He was African. So Leo, but Scipio Africanus supposedly had beat Hannibal in Carthage. And so, but Rinocchio has done this. I read Dr. Clark. I read all of them. No, these people were not, Africa was not named after them.
Okay.
See, they were not named after Africa, or Afrique was a language pretty much in the eastern part of the continent. And so that's where they got its name. Some could argue about El Kabalon. Some could argue about Ethiopia, you know, but it has been settled, I guess, to some degree, that the continent will be called Africa, you know.
And by who? By who?
By Africans.
By Africans. Okay.
By Africans, you know, because once again, it's that thinking that Europeans gives us everything. They impose everything, not just on us, but on the world. Because as you said, the English language in itself, it truly is a bastardized language. They have multiple meanings. In fact, I remember reading an article, "The English Language is My Enemy." Ozzie Davis.
Okay.
"The English language is my enemy." Mm-hmm. And they're speaking in reference to, you know, the words that they use and what they mean. Like, especially like when Muhammad Ali was talking about, yeah, you're talking about white and black. You know, white, it's all angelic and this, that, and other. White, angel food cake. And then you're talking about black, it's all devil food cake, you know, and all sullied and so forth, you know. And of course, that is true. That is true because that's the narrative they wanted to perpetuate. And so as that consistently was bombarding us, that's why, listen, both of us remember there was a time that you wouldn't want to be called black.
No.
No.
There are people under the ground right now for no other reason than another person, black, called them black.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, this predated the,
right.
the civil rights movement.
Right.
And the consciousness movement,
mm-hmm.
of us coming back and, you know, reconnecting to our ancestry and our history in Africa. Mm-hmm. But clearly, yeah, it was something, a title or a word that we embraced, much like the word nigger.
Yeah.
You know, we took that and owned it and you know, treated it in a certain way.
Right. That's why they say that we co-opted that word. We own that word. And that, so even today, there's no more volatile word in the English language. There is nothing that we can call Caucasians, Europeans, that is deeply sensitive. I mean, you can call Caucasians, and I have, and I don't supposed to do it, and I don't do it no more. But just for the sake of this discussion, crackers,
mm-hmm.
you know, rednecks.
Honky.
Richard Pryor and Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
It's Saturday Night Live. What do you think when you hear spear chucker, jigaboo? You know, so, but there's nothing that is in this language that would refer to Caucasians in such a deep, hurtful manner as the word that, you know, and what is interesting about that word, there are some derivatives of that word because I remember what you said many years ago, the word Negro, that your intellect don't, you know, is no higher than your knee.
Yes.
You know, Negro. But see, also the root word is necro. And in Greek, necro means dead.
Mm.
Dead. And so, you know, because really black is blanc. It's not Negro in Spanish, blanc.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, but, so this word has been attached to us, and we have made it not only a so-called term of endearment, but even the one of the derivatives of the word nigga, because, you know, somebody said, well, I feel offended they call me a nigger, you know, because you could hear that as Caucasians would say that, you nigger. And you knew that was something that was deeply offensive, deeply hurting, and so forth. But then, of course, then there's nigga. That's my nigga, you know. And that's the N-I-G-G-A. And so a brother, like we always do, we came up with an acronym, you know. And his acronym was Never Ignorant Getting Goals Accomplished. Well, the acronym is cool, you know. Because what it says, but if it's real, I'd be saying nigga all day long if we were never ignorant and we were getting goals accomplished in towards our self-determination, our liberation, and our sovereignty. Man, I'd be the number one. But that's not the case. And the word, I don't use it. I don't use that. And I don't use the B word to describe our women. Now, you know, I cuss, me and you cuss, but I know we do. Oh, I shouldn't have said it over the air. People probably wouldn't know your name. I'd have busted you out.
I mean, certainly, it's not always necessarily in a fit of anger, but there are times when it seems like we reach for a tool and that's the one you pull out of the bag and it suffices. But clearly, you can get in a lot of trouble trying to reach a pure sort of place with the English language, because if you go to the root of words, then you might end up finding something that this really has no real foundation in it. And also, many of the things or that we derive or take on here come from other languages, and so you have to find the appropriate word to use, and it's constantly changing. So you know, you just have to stay up to date.
Because see, that's the issue with this language, and there are multiple meanings. And then of course you add us, because you add us into this mix. You know, often thought what this society would be like with us out of it. Mm. Just Europeans. Europeans came here, they decimated the indigenous people, which of course is their day to mourn and reflect. And they didn't bring us over here. They did whatever they had to do. They imagine how foul this damn place would be. Imagine how, you know, we brought the funk.
Yeah.
You know, and as a consequence, even the language, we subverted various words. Right here, like the word cool. Well, the word cool means kind of chill, but the word cool can mean a whole bunch of things as far as we're concerned. You know, oh, that's cold. Oh, that's bad. You know, bad meaning good. You know, so we flipped it.
And thank God for metaphors.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you want to come up with an appropriate word without borrowing from the negative or taking from, you know, things that have been passed down to us from, you know, Caucasian people. And so we survive. That's one thing we know how to do. We know how to improvise in order to survive.
Yeah.
And that's what we've done.
Yeah.
I mean, originally, when we came here, this wasn't our language. And so, they didn't intend to lend it to us for our betterment. So we picked up things and we put our own connotation on them.
Mm-hmm.
That's just part of our creativity. And of course, it goes with our music. It goes with our humor.
Yeah.
And clearly, without our humor, we would not have survived this. Sometimes things get so bad, after you done cried all you can cry, the best thing you can do is come up with something to laugh about. Yeah. As I told a sister, you know, you mentioned on Friday that, you know, my being here in Atlanta was coming here to pay respects to my nephew who passed away,
mm-hmm.
Clay Johnson. But I was talking to his wife last night, and I was telling her that it's important for you to keep going Clay started.
Exactly.
And that the best medicine and the only medicine that has no side effect is humor.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, what did Smokey Robinson say? I have to laugh or dance to keep from crying. So mm-hmm. that's how we survive.
Yeah. And of course, because we're so good at it, look what we have done to this country. Look what we have given to this country. You know. But for me, this is still theirs. This is not ours. We have made tremendous contributions to this country in spite of, you know, because really, if you let the honest Caucasian tell it, they don't want us here. You know, after we did what we did, they wish we would disappear. You know, just like that, what was that, the day of absence?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the day of absence. They wish we would just be gone, you know. But we have done so much. I mean, just think of the athletic endeavors we've had in the name of this damn country.
The only true American art form
jazz.
Came from us.
Jazz. The only true American art form. Jazz. You know?
Everything else came from somewhere else. And as I once heard someone say that at the time that jazz came about and evolved, that they were looking for somebody, but they didn't expect it to be Louis Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
They was looking for somebody like Beethoven, Bach,
yeah.
Brahms.
Yeah.
Came from us.
Yeah.
And we made something out of nothing and a way out of no way. And if they they act like they want us. I heard Paul Mooney say that they don't want us in their neighborhood, but when we was enslaved, we was in their house.
Yeah.
And so take us out of here. This would be a sad place.
I'm telling you, man.
A sad place.
Because boring as hell.
They when it comes to the native peoples, they have pretty well stripped them down. Mm-hmm. And they've gotten a little bit back through,
sure.
As Paul Mooney said, don't bother us, we gambling. So they got some of their land back. They got, but for us,
mm-hmm.
there's no land here for us.
No,
anything that we would take or accept here on a grand scale, and back in the day, Elijah Muhammad and many other charismatic leaders talked about them giving us a part of this country to make our own. That was not going to happen. Never going to happen.
No.
These people.
And I have a love for Republic of New Africa and the Nation of Islam and the belief that some of us want to believe that we can have a part of this country, where we can live freely. We had, out of the enslavement, where we knew we had to do for ourselves. Because going to Caucasians was not, no matter where you were, if your ass was south of the Canadian border, if hell, you south of the North Pole, it would be the same thing. There is nowhere, so we had to pull resources, had to come together. Boley, Oklahoma, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Rosewood, Florida, Elaine, Arkansas, Allentown in Los Angeles area. And so for these places were self-contained, these places where we spend amongst ourselves creating commerce within ourselves, banks, hotels, restaurants, and so forth. We did this. But because of the evilness, the selfishness, the jealousies of the European, of them seeing us doing what we were, naturally doing in this society, like everybody else, but they had a fit, And of course, we could use one of us accosted a Caucasian woman, has the pretense of going in there, taking our stuff, burning our stuff down, and either killing us, imprisoning us, or just exiling us, So today. And even though we had some places like the Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina, the Haitai community there, and Milwaukee where we live, they do? Model cities, expressway coming right through there, dividing those communities and tearing them apart. So today, there is not one place in this country that is totally ours, where all the businesses, the jobs, self-contained. There is no place like that in this country. There's a few villages, like the Olutunji village in South Carolina, but all of them still have to pay taxes, pay the water bill, and so forth and so on. They are not sovereign. There is no sovereignty. Hell, there ain't sovereignty here for Caucasians.
Well, the self-sufficiency that we developed after slavery due to segregation. And again, as I mentioned on Friday, the late Annette Polly Williams, state representative from Milwaukee, I believe, I don't remember her district.
Me either.
But she made a statement once, and it took me a while to decipher exactly what she was meaning, but she said, integration destroyed the black community. And what she meant was, part of it, I won't try to explain away, she deserves full credit, is our self-sufficiency. The individuals that were in our community, professional, so forth, chasing Caucasian people to the suburbs, left nothing behind.
Yeah.
And so now part of my time here, and I lived about 8 or 9 years here in metropolitan Atlanta, and part of my being here between you and Brother Sharif, taking me around, showing the design that has been created around this country where mm-hmm. African Americans have been uprooted and moved out on reservations yeah. where yeah. they have their access to transportation and water and a lot of things, mm-hmm. self-sufficiency, exists no more.
Yeah.
And add to the equation this implosion of immigrants, and I don't have anything against immigrants, but it seems that somewhere they meet before they come here and someone shows them a map and said, you can go to this city and you can target these people mm-hmm. and you can provide mm-hmm. their hair products. You can provide.
Yeah.
You have Palestinian, Jordanian Arabs selling to African Americans fried chicken, fish, red yeah. velvet cake.
Yeah,
all over the country.
Yeah.
You know, things like this can't happen by accident.
No, it's not.
Somebody designed this,
yes.
and it's working so well, and it almost appears overwhelming to overcome. I mean, where do you start? How do you get the, and I think this is what your program is part of what it's dedicated to, is trying to reach a collective consciousness where we are not always looking out for a direction, but look in to ourselves and try to become self-sufficiency. Mm-hmm. And where do you start? Do you mm-hmm. start with the youth? Mm-hmm. Some people have said that. I'm tired of trying to talk to grown folks. And I'm going past middle school and go down and try to work
right.
with these young people.
Yeah.
And God bless them. Because how do you catch hold of a tiger? Mm-hmm. How do you eat an elephant? A little bit at a time, but man.
Yeah.
You know, it is daunting sometimes,
yeah.
but, you know, we carry on.
Yeah, that's the reality. That's the piece, because, you know, look at our situation after 400 years. And that was a whole thing about 400 years, 1619, 2019. What is our situation? Now, obviously, Caucasians, as I said, once again, referring to that article I was going to read, we have it better, has even poorer than a lot of places in the world,
sure.
you know, and I understand that, but I don't give a damn about that, because it's not how better we have it. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about independence. I'm talking about self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. I don't give a damn about how better it is here in America under their rule, under their dominance, because one thing that I've realized for sure about Caucasians, you know, because that's what Rosewood and Tulsa was about, you know, because of being excluded, we came together, pulled resources, and did this. And what happens? Oh no, you can't do this. You can't try to compete with me.
And you know? Oshie, and people, whoever is listening out there, I always try to not forget to include the word jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you look at, you know, whether you read the story of Rosewood in Florida, this self independent African American community, self-reliant,
mm-hmm.
there were some people who maybe had more than they had,
mm-hmm.
but who they became the main targets of is people who had less than what they had.
Yeah.
I can't remember it, but Lyndon Johnson's once made a statement about if you can convince.
That's right.
A poor white man that he's better than the best, you know, Barack Obama.
Yeah.
He said, you can pick his pockets and he won't say nothing.
That's right.
And a lot of the times, that's the proxy that we sometimes end up fighting against when it's really a puppeteer, you know,
right.
holding the string.
That's right.
And sending us down this blind alley.
Mm-hmm.
Jealousy is part of it.
The hidden hand.
Yes.
That maneuvers all of this, and really the hand ain't hidden; they overt sometimes, and sometimes yes, it is hidden, you know. But just like you said, you know, people have come to this country in the last 30-something years from other parts of the world, and they come directly into our community, you know,
to set up shop,
yeah.
not to live.
No, not to live. No,
yeah.
no, they may live for a minute. you know, two or three families in mm-hmm. in the store downstairs while they live upstairs, you know. But the store is stocked very well. It's all of that, you know. It's in the neighborhood. There is no other store within maybe a three-block radius. That is the store. They have no respect for us. Even though they may be Muslim, they selling pork.
Alcohol, cigarettes, lottery tickets,
yeah.
pornography.
Yeah. So it doesn't make any difference of the theology that they have. The bottom line is who they are here in this country and what their purpose is.
And how they
is
behave. And how yeah. they behave.
Yeah. You know? And so on this Indigenous Peoples Day, we're going to take a break. And when we come back from the break, we'll engage in more discussion on this day. This is a day of mourning. This is a day of mourning.
Not a holiday.
Not a holiday. I know a lot of people are off today. The banks are closed. Some schools might be closed. I know the post office is closed and so forth and so on. But, you know, no, this is not a holiday. And I'm glad the fact that many states have decided not to call it Columbus Day. I don't know. You know, I was in an Italian community center in Milwaukee. You know, they love Christopher. I mean, hell, he's Italian. And he's the one that opened this way. He's the one that provided Europeans to be in this particular position, which is world domination. I don't know if they talked about it then. Let me say this to you. I know they talked about it in 1884, 85 in Berlin. At the Berlin Conference, when they physically sat at a table and looked at a big-ass map and talking about, I want this, I want that. Well, you take this, I'll take that.
And from a topographical perspective,
yeah.
made Europe and North America look larger than the entire African continent.
Yep. Yeah. Because in their mind, the wealth that was accumulated and done, they were big. Mm-hmm. You know, Europe was huge. British Empire, the sun never set on the British Empire. Because why? They went around the world taking everybody's stuff in the name of. When the European came, he didn't come to bargain. He didn't come to barter. He didn't come to trade. He came to take.
Conquer.
Conquer.
Conquer, pillage, and plunder.
Plunder, yeah.
Rape.
Yeah.
Sodomize, denigrate. Reduce you to the lowest terms. They attempted to make us and anybody with any pigment, melanin around the country, beneath animals.
Yeah,
they treat even to this day.
Hey, yeah.
You will find people leaving their inheritance to their dog or cat, and yeah. people starving to death and living outside.
Yeah,
but no,
dog or the cat is living large and has an inheritance. And probably will be cremated. No, they'll be freeze them. Oh, brothers and sisters.
Taxidermied.
Yeah. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Please, Mr. Groove, won't you come back home? Won't you come back? Please, won't you come back? Won't you come back? Please, won't you come back? We'll be right back.
never leave a state. Hey!
Yet, y'all, it ain't over yet.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. That was Al Hudson, One Way, Mr. Groove. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programming that we have here on the Time for an Awakening Media. On Mondays, this program, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., followed on Monday and Wednesday by the Black People Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones from 1 to 3. Other programming on Monday, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8, followed by Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9, and then it's Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey at 9 p.m.
on Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10, and then followed on Wednesday by Revive with Sister POC on Wednesdays from 8 to 10. It's Thursday. It's Relationships with Joy and Troy. Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. on Thursday. And then Friday at 8 p.m., it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening at 7 p.m., once again, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then every Monday, Wednesday through Friday, Monday through Friday, from 10 p.m. Eastern Time, it's the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. My good brother, Dr. Renoko Rashidi, will be going his first tour next year. He's already out of the country. I think he's in Europe somewhere, checking out a museum as usual, you know, and that's what he does. He's a primary researcher and historian. He goes there personally to check it out, getting firsthand information for us, and he needs to be supported, dear brothers. Believe me, he may have 100-something thousand followers, and he does, I believe. You know, imagine if just a good fraction, maybe a third, that's a good number, would give him some support. You know, I believe in him, and I've known him a long time. In fact, when I saw him, when did I see Renoko? Shucks, was it that long ago? But anyway, I reminded him of the when I first saw him was LeGrand Clegg, a brother out of Los Angeles, created a documentary called When Black Men Ruled, you know. And they did some cutaways, and he's part of one of them, Dr. Finch, and a number of others, to substantiate that period of time when, you know, when people came to sit at our feet to study because we had created so much. So he's going to Senegal, Gambia, and Guinea-Bissau, January 21st through February 4th, 2020. It's not a bad trip, and the cost of it is $3,900. $3,856. If you want a single room for the duration of the trip, just add another $680. You get a single room. That $3,800 is based on double occupancy. And then if there's a special itinerary in Senegal, you have a chance to visit the radiocarbonation lab where Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop had developed that particular method in terms of measuring distance, I mean, measuring time, the radiocarbonation lab. And of course, Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop, we owe a great debt of gratitude to for his debate in Cairo in 74 at the Cairo Symposium, where he and another brother named Dr. Thelophilia Obinga, who was a linguistic, argued so persuasively about who the ancient Egyptians are. But you can still see, because Caucasians suffer from cognitive dissonance, they believe they're superior. And even though there's a plethora of information to prove otherwise, they dismiss it. They ignore it. Because it doesn't fit well with who and what they say they are.
I can't recall his name, but there was a Caucasian anthropologist who wanted to insist that the Egyptians were not African.
Yeah.
And even when he went over to, I can't remember what country he was in, and they were, you know, doing some excavating, and he unearthed something that clearly showed that the Egyptians were African, he still rejected it outright.
Yeah.
And when you were talking about Brother Renoko, I know a place Brother Renoko would like to be locked up for at least a week is the Vatican. The Vatican,
yes.
And the books and the treasures,
yeah,
that they've stolen and that are there. Wow. And I'd like to be on a fly on the wall while he's there for a week just uncovering all of the truth that they've buried.
Oh, man. I tell you, when you said that, I thought about Farrakhan. I charge the white man with being the greatest adulterer on earth, the greatest thief on earth. I charge the white man. Because, I mean, when you look at what he has done, you know, although that article that I referenced a few times already, I'm going to get off into that at another day or time, you know. But if you were a Caucasian, or even if you were a Negro, you could agree with what the article is saying, you know, in terms of what, how good Caucasians have done and what benefit that they have derived to the world. We got a caller. Good afternoon, caller 646. Good afternoon.
Brother Oshi, and to your guests, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Jay.
Fine, thank you, brother.
It's amazing how when you look at history, nobody puts into context how Christopher Columbus was a fool who didn't know where he was going and wound up someplace and then deemed it as something he discovered, and in the process led to total havoc of a people.
Yeah. Erased the Taino people.
It's just amazing. Yes. I mean, he is probably one of the individuals responsible for more death to African people than one could truly ever imagine. You know what I mean? That's why whenever I hear someone talk about the Jewish Holocaust, I just look at them. I don't even reply to it. Because I know as African people, we lost way more. I know that in the bottom of oceans, they are the bones of African people. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's just amazing to where, as, you know, they try to change history, but I think they're now calling this day the Indigenous Holiday or some other type of nonsense.
Right. Well, they're calling it Indigenous Peoples Day. And that started about 10 or so years ago. When indigenous people said,
"I guess it's picking up now."
Huh?
I guess it's picking up now.
Yeah, it is. It is. Because many states and some municipalities have put it into their law that this day will no longer be called this. It'll be called that. You see?
Well, the Caucasian people, Europeans, have been excellent at is withholding information long enough so that by the time it comes forth and you get a dram of recognition, in many respects, it just doesn't rise to the level that it should because you're so overwhelmed by commercialization. You know, getting past them, when you can believe when they acknowledge something, they done figured out a way to capitalize on it.
Well, you know, today is a day where there's holidays to get the Negro to come into the store to spend his money. Today, school is out. Banks are closed. You know, it's a longer holiday. You know, it's just a commercialization of a form of genocide to a people that, you know, I guess makes it acceptable in these savages' minds. You know, I mean, the mind of the white man is an amazing mind, man. There's no other like it. Sometimes I really wonder if they're human. You know what I mean? Do they have any sense of feeling in regards to the things that they have done? You know what I mean? And now, like the indigenous people, they're just trying to do what they always do, man. And that's changed the narrative of their barbaric nature. You can't change the narrative of someone being a barbaric individual. The sad thing is because our people don't read and don't have no true concept of history, we go along with these type of narratives. But the narrative has always been that this white man is the most brutalist thing on the planet. There's nothing more brutal than this white man on the planet. You know what I mean? No other people has behaved like this white man on the planet. And, you know, I don't understand it, and I don't understand how people don't realize it. Now, this is something, the nature of the white man that I saw. I don't know how true it is, but I saw, I think it's in Atlanta, that they got this sick white boy that went out there and slept with a whole bunch of black women and then gave them supposedly HIV and AIDS. And the number that they're talking about is just astronomical. I think it's like 600. Now, I mean, think about that. How twisted is it on his part, but how twisted it is on the black women part that they would sleep with a dog? You know what I mean?
I haven't heard that, Jay. I looked at research on that, and I haven't heard that.
Yeah. I saw it on the internet. Now, I don't know if it's Atlanta. It could be someplace else. I think it's maybe Atlanta. But the point of the matter is 600 women talking about that this character has slept with. So you're saying 600 black women don't have enough self-respect for themselves to go out there and sleep with a dog.
Yeah. That's why,
I mean, something is fundamentally wrong with us as a people when we behave like that.
But something that you mentioned brought this to mind when you talked about the Holocaust compared to our history. And so just imagine if we had an opportunity, and the word race comes to mind. We are not a race. And then when you think of the word race, meaning like a contest, you know, trying to reach a point, and who gets there first. So here you have a people, and here I'm talking about the people that are called Jewish people. Just imagine if you had the opportunity to have in your diaspora, your spread around the world, strategically placed so that you could put your narrative in. Because if you look at what was the Holocaust, and it was sad, it was inhumane what was done, but if you compare that length of time from what, about
1948 to
45, it might not even be a decade.
Yeah,
but
no,
you compare that history to the history of, you know, on the continent, and bringing us out. And you know, with the intention of, you know, making us commerce, the human commerce, and now, okay, little by little, I'll give you some recognition back. After a while, it's almost understandable why it doesn't mean anything to some people, because then you competing with people's attention for what they makes them feel satisfied: money, material, and I'm here. So, you know, who wants to think about that stuff that happened back then? But you find these people have put themselves on the map, on the calendar, and on the map, that every year you're reminded of the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, if you can control the narrative, and if you can have the vision to say, I'm going to set this thing in motion, can you imagine if the people back when they started this could see what they've come up with now and see our position in the world and all the people they've conquered and oppressed and colonized? And okay, now I'm gonna let you free, but you're gonna operate the same way you did when I had you captive. That's something to to behold.
That's why I keep saying they have a vice grip on our minds, our behavior. What'd you say, Jay?
Well, it's all about one thing. The one thing that keeps them in power, sorry to say, but truthfully is what the deal is, they control the narrative. If you control the narrative of anything, then you are the one who dictates how things go. And that's the level that we are at as a people. We don't control no narratives or nothing.
Well, we some of us are too busy watching Power and Empire and all this nonsense.
That ain't even part of the equation, to be honest, brother. That right there is not even part of our problem or our symptom. It could be that, or it could be anything. The problem is that we don't collectively come together and understand what our position is and how we should move forward as a collective people and set forward what our agenda is. You know, no TV show or anything should have that type of power.
But it does.
And give you your collective identity.
But it
brother,
does.
Brother, and I'm here, honesty, I'm here really to doesn't. Support my nephew's family who just passed. And I don't know if any of them are listening, but I tell you, last night I was in a company of people, and it probably might have been 15 people there. And I sat back and watched the attention that I think power was on. And it was something to watch. I didn't turn around to watch the show, but I couldn't help but every now and then look back and watch how tuned in they were. So I don't know, and it's not just that one thing. It's a you talking about collective consciousness. What is the barrier to arriving at a collective consciousness? A collection of things, a collection of distractions. Our people are severely distracted by a lot of things that they kind of take lightly, whether it be tattooing, earring, but just a whole collect. What's on television? What's on social media? You can't overlook the effect that has, or the challenge of you trying to create a collective conscience, because someone already has their conscience, yeah, and they have it like you said, a vice grip on it.
Yep.
Yeah, but the vice grip isn't the type of vice grip that if we put forward our analysis, if we put forward our agenda, that we couldn't take them away from. But it's just that we haven't placed ourselves in the position to put forward a narrative. It's just like, think about this. If somebody was to say, if you had an opportunity to start a business, what type of business would it be? I would probably say what we really need is a business dealing in opinions and ideas. We need a promotional and marketing business that put forward these type of ideas and images that are needed to change how things are. Remember that book that people talk about, I think it's Tom Burrell's book, Brainwash. Now, just think about it. Burrell is a Negro. But if you read Burrell's book, some people would think that he has a degree of consciousness, or he's conscious, but he's a pure Negro. Now, the thing is, imagine if you had our scholars come together and deal on that type of level, being able to influence and, as one say, brainwash our people into being a collective, cohesive group with African ideas and opinions. I'm telling you, that's what's needed, man. You need individuals to come together to be able to put forward a message to our people that could captivate them. And that's why we're in the position that we're in, because others are able to captivate how we react, how we think, how we process things, and all of that, how we see things. I mean, nobody never takes into consideration, and I always say this, whenever I'm talking to these Negroes that talk about their psychologists and psychiatrists and all of this, there's only one fundamentally question that I always ask them. Have you read the works of Amos Wilson? If you haven't read the works for Amos Wilson, you can't tell me Sugar Honey Iced Tea, because you don't understand the separation and the balance of African psychology and European psychology. If you've never studied what Amos is talking about to kind of react European psychology, then what are we talking about? Because you have no African perspective on any effing thing. So how are you going to help me when my problem is dealing with the tragedy of my African being swept away? Do you understand what I'm trying to say on that point?
I do. I understand. And understand this, Jay, is that this is an environment where that can't happen. It's hard for us to understand what is happening to us because we're bombarded 24/7 and all those mixed messages from what is good to what is inherently evil. But it all is evil. But there's a perception this is what is good. And so therefore, we keep going after that. There's this constant belief that somehow, some way, that we can change the dynamic through our humanity, through African humanity. We can change, we can humanize the Caucasian. We can make him have an epiphany and realize the wrong that he has done and be willing to change that and then accept us into his situation as so-called equals.
No, but you can't do that. But what you have to do is place yourself in a position to where you see that and you understand that. That's why I was trying to make the point about Amos Wilson. You see, the thing is, you can't change in a lot of ways what this net has done. But what you can do is you can wake up the people to what has been done and then put them in a position to process what has been done. And that's something that we haven't done. We haven't placed ourselves in the position to process what he's done to us and to be able to move forward and to try and figure out how we could become whole as a people. We haven't done that. And until we do that, we're going to still be in this situation because that's the way the situation is geared towards. What we don't understand is the situation is also geared for us to make a change within ourselves and within our communities if we can figure out how to follow certain principles. That's the way you make a community whole. That's the way you have institutions like Baba Baruti and others. That's how you have to do it, because you're not going to save all of the people. You're just going to save a small portion of our people, and that small portion of our people is supposed to get to the point that lead us into the right direction on how we liberate ourselves and find the sovereignty necessary to be a sustained people on the planet. That's where we're missing out at. It's only going to be a small group. That's why they talk about the 10%, the 5%, and the 85%. You know what I mean? So in all honesty, the majority of our people are always going to be lost because of what the value system is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there are a group of us who have to figure out how we collectively come together and move forward.
Okay.
Well, your business model would have to take into consideration some of what you said in the sense that you would have to start small. And then you would have to have things built in, because remember, I don't know of a group of people, and I mean as a group, but it goes across America or the world, if you will, where people have been taken advantage of. You think of some people, when you talk about having a collective consciousness and forming something and trying to bring people together, what's going to come to mind is the how we've historically been exploited. Now, it was very interesting to me. I don't know about anybody else, but when you mentioned the 85%, the 10%, and the 5%, that's straight out of the playbook of the Elijah Muhammad's Nation of Islam. There's a lesson that says, who is the 85%, the 10%, and the 5%? That's where the term, this
5%ers.
5%ers came from. 85% are the masses, the poison animal eaters, slaves of mental death and power. The 10% are the rich, and the 5% are the poor, righteous teachers.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I didn't invent that. I did embrace it at one time, so I don't know if the breakdown from 1930 still exists as it is today. But clearly, for what we're talking about, you would have to start with a small group. And in fact, in your family is one of the places you want to start, because if you can't convince your family members to do something, okay, I'm kind of stand back and watch. Okay, let me see how far y'all going to go with this. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot to take in when you talk about trying to collectively bring us together.
Always going to be a small percentage to move forward the masses, because they're going to be the ones that's going to show and set the example of what has to be done. And this is not a process that's going to take a few years. It's going to take many years to turn around what has happened to us. Because if you notice, as time has evolved, as far as black people go, we lose more and more of a position in this country to freaks and degenerates than we do to anything. I mean, you're in a position right now, sorry to say it, where black people are basically at the bottom of the barrel. That's think about, how do you get to a position in the country to where, as you have a bunch of freaks and degenerates having more of an influence and say so in the direction of a country that you built? The LGBTQ and the gay mafia and the rest of them degenerates have more of a say so in this country than black people do.
No doubt, they have more resources. People do. You know, they have more financial resources. They have positions. They have, Jay, as you know, they have normalized that behavior to the point that there is rumblings about pedophilia and bestiality.
Right. So what do that tell you? They were able to do what? To put forward and bring forward an agenda, an ideology, a space. They was able to create the narrative that they have at this time to be able to even make one thing.
But Jay, they stole the narrative from the civil rights movement.
Yeah.
There's a case within the past 2 weeks before the United States Supreme Court where they were arguing whether or not the right to of a gay person to be on a job, whether it's a civil right or not, whether or not I can dismiss you or terminate your employment. Now, they've already passed what's called, what is the term used for an employer can pretty much fire anybody for anything.
For just cause.
Right.
Yeah, right to work.
Right to work. So they've come in, they've taken on all of those gains by us, and basically, they've been added to the equation in terms of the immigrant population that has come here that can pass for white, have added to the numbers of those people who, prior to the civil rights movement, weren't considered white, Jewish people, Irish, Italians, anybody but an Anglo-Saxon proud. So they are constantly, what we're pushing up against is the constant enlargement of the group that's asking for some of what we either asking for or feel like this is our right to demand this. As Malik Shabazz says, we have a right to these things by any means necessary. They've taken that narrative and said, basically said, you can fight in the court, but if you fight in the street, it's illegitimate. If you take up arms to defend your community, it's illegitimate. Mm-hmm. So taking into consideration how these people have set up a structure that, unless, kind of like Oshie's narrative, unless you turn completely away from it, you will be frustrated by the question, how long is this going to take for us to get here? And most of our people's social media and whatnot, attention span is so short, unless you could, what do they call it, a 30-second elevator speech, that's what we have to develop to get the attention of many of our people away from what it's focused on, which is me, material.
Because we're in America. America's about individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. It's been that way since the inception, because it is that way because that's how Europeans are. And that's the deal.
That's the fact, Jack.
So nothing more violent than a white man, man. I can't think of none. They try to make others out to be as violent as this white man, but there's nothing on the planet more violent than him, man, when it comes down.
Well, Jay, what this man is capable of doing, I said this yesterday and I say it all the time, when the group that I was in. There used to be a time when you would hear of something on the news or in the newspaper, and you would say, I know that wasn't an African-American person
right.
that did that. And the other part of our energy is when we hear something is, God, please don't let that be one of us.
Yeah.
But so I'm going to quote Minister Farrakhan. He said, we have been brought into the white man's mind and taken out of our own mind. So very often when you see our people behave, you have to kind of stand back and look. Is he acting like he's been, is that learned behavior? Or is that, no, in most cases with us, it's learned behavior. And as Minister Farrakhan said, if you ever want to, anybody listening, go on YouTube and put in the search engine, Minister Farrakhan, soul and homosexuality. And if you listen to how he deals with that subject, it is one of the most classic responses to that dilemma that has been sort of put on us, because now, as Chris Rock say, now everybody got at least a gay cousin. So, you know, how are we going to deal with that particular element? And if it's my nephew, I have to love my nephew, but at the same time, even though I find his behavior repugnant, mm-hmm. and I wish I could change him or change his mind, but, you know, that's something that has to happen on a real up-close, personal, one-on-one.
You see, there was no homosexuality on the continent until Europeans.
That's what Mr. Farrakhan says in that particular narrative.
There's no homo. One of the people who I respect highly was Nana Hochi, who is an Ifa priest and lecturer and studier, just a brilliant man. He was in Milwaukee for many years. In fact, his wife gave me my name because she said, I see you in the community and the work that you do. I have a name for you, Oshiemi Adelabu. And so then I made it my name legally. And so when she died, I was at the firehouse. I had to pay respects to her. So I left the firehouse, called the chief up, say, I'm putting somebody in. I'm going to go pay respects to her. They had, he had moved here to Atlanta. And I saw a piece where he wrote, I have studied African societies diligently, seriously, and found nowhere where homosexuality was practiced or condoned. Nowhere. This is a European. Oh, is homosexuality on the continent? Of course it is. After the many years of colonization of Europeans, homosexuality now is everywhere. In fact, the European has told many societies or countries that wanted to deal with them for terms of aid and so forth, just like Barack did. Barack went to Africa and told them, if you want this aid, then you should not be oppressing homosexuals. You must allow it to take place. And they were like, no, it's not happening. I don't want your aid. It's not happening here. You know, for me, because just as Muhammad just said, I have relatives that are homosexual. Some of them I still like as brothers and sisters. But I know in the movement that I'm in, the African-centered movement, there is no homosexual plank. Just like the Black Lives Matter was really started by homosexuals. There's no homosexual wing.
Four queer women that identify themselves as queer. And I had this discussion yesterday, and it comes up often. Can you be Muslim and homosexual? And I'm probably one of the few imams who will say, yes, but you cannot practice homosexuality. I have no control over who you attracted to. Fundamentally, that's what homosexuality is. You have an attraction to the same sex. I've never had that. I have no idea what that feels like. So just like fornication and adultery are haram against the law in Islam, so would be the practice of homosexuality. So you could come become homosexual and be a good, as close to excellence as you can be Muslim, but you cannot be having sex. A Muslim man can't even have sex in his wife's anus, and they're legally married. So how can you create a law? As we say, there are some things in our religion, in our culture, that there's flexibility. Homosexuality is not one of them. I don't care when. No way homosexuality is ever going to be allowable in my community. I'm not having that. I have no control over what people do in America. I don't have anything against homosexuals. But as long as you're not dealing with a child or an elderly person, abusing them, whatever two consenting adults do here in America under the Constitution, that's their business. But they've brought this into the public square.
Yep.
And almost enforced it on people, yep, to the point where if you have any celebrity or recognition or position in society and you don't openly condone this or you speak even slightly against it, you will be excommunicated like a Jehovah's Witness or somebody in the Nation of Islam that done committed fornication. I can't put you out of Islam for committing fornication or adultery here in America, but clearly you cannot say anything back. These people have gained a level and rights, and it all goes along with the educational system in the West, secular humanism. Human beings are just another animal. So you should be able to take your clothes off in public if you want to. You should be able to have sex with anybody or anything that you want to, as long as it's not a child or elderly person. I have no strength or no position to buck up against that.
But they're also pushing pedophilia. They're pushing pedophilia to the extent. And bestiality. So I'm saying, you know, we as African people don't understand this European mind and what it has done to us and continues to do to us. That's why I advocate getting up out of here, taking whatever small groups of us who truly want to understand the importance of being who we are as African people, being independent, being self-determining, being liberated, and being sovereign. That nobody outside of us speaks for us. Nobody outside of us does anything for us. We do all ourselves, whatever that is. We can't do it here, Jay. You know that. We cannot do it here in this country. This is the belly of the beast.
And I don't want to push just the subject of homosexuality, but look what happened to Barack Obama when he became president. When he became president, he had a position that he did not believe that homosexuals should be able to marry. But they worked on him enough where by the time he said, well, I've evolved to this position. I don't know any way that I could evolve to a position of doing something that whether you like or believe in what we know as religion or not, you cannot overlook the fact that in most religion, in Islam, it's still the case, originally had a very strong position against homosexuality. Mm-hmm. But in time, after they gained the strength of taking the example from the civil rights movement, they pushed this to the point where they pushed Christian and Jewish communities to accept homosexuality. There are openly homosexual preachers, pastors, reverends.
There's a Muslim mosque that is openly homosexual.
You talking about the one in Canada?
Is that what it is? I thought it was here.
They tried. Well, listen, anybody in America going to try anything.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, you can't bring that. You better keep it in that place.
That's right.
You are not going to be coming to another community. There are all kinds of Muslims that pray together. I'm not a Shiite. I don't have a problem with a Shiite praying next to me. But if someone openly said they were practicing homosexuality as a Muslim, no, well, you can't come in here with that.
Yeah.
You
so best. So he would not be welcome in the mosque.
Hell no. Hell no. That ain't happening. As Minister Farrakhan said on that program, Soul and 1971, 72, you won't find brothers walking around in Africa with broken wrists. Yeah. He said, this is a learned behavior. And the pedophilia piece, here's what I would say with that. I don't know many gay individuals who were not violated when they were young children.
That's right.
Ellen DeGeneres, probably the biggest celebrity gay person in the world, has her own TV show. She recently said herself that she was sexually violated by her stepdad, and her mother rebuffed her, rejected, didn't want to believe that it happened. I have yet to meet a homosexual person who was not violated, and who's going to, you know, even if it was a heterosexual person, you know, of course it must be something twisted, because what there's nothing a child could do for me. There's nothing, I don't care how pretty or what, there's no attraction that I have sexually or beyond the normal family or human affection to a child, but somebody that looks at a child and says, that's somebody I want to engage in sexuality with, that person is evil.
And evil. Sick and evil and sick. Jay, you still there, man? Jay.
Yeah, I'm still here. Okay. I got a quick question for Brother Muhammad.
Yes, sir.
Now, you say this in regards to Farrakhan. Let me ask you this question. Do this position still stand firm today?
With Minister Farrakhan?
Do that position still stand firm today?
With Minister Farrakhan, you mean?
Yeah.
As far as I know, but no for a surety, after the controversy that erupted when Minister Farrakhan was supporting Jesse Jackson's run for president, and he said something that the Jewish people took offense to, someone sat Minister Farrakhan and talked. You find the position of the Nation of Islam under Farrakhan from Elijah Muhammad has softened a lot. You don't hear very often somebody in the Nation of Islam publicly refer to Caucasian people as devils. But inside their community, they still believe that Caucasian people, I don't believe this as a Muslim, but they still believe that Caucasian people were manufactured by a black scientist named Yaku. That's some L. Ron Hubbard nonsense that they, I don't know who borrowed, whether this guy borrowed it from them. Again, I hope this doesn't get too far away from your question, Jay, but I have recently told people I do not believe that the man that Elijah Muhammad said produced him, who they called God in person, W.D. Farrar, I don't believe that that man told Elijah Muhammad to say that he was God. Elijah Muhammad came in the era of charismatic leadership where individuals were saying they were gods and prophets. Father Divine said he was God. When they asked Father Divine, what year were you born? He said, I was combusted in the year 18 something, something, something. So the Nation of Islam under Farrakhan has evolved and tried to become a little bit more mainstream. So I have to check back from time to time to see what Farrakhan is saying, because some things he said previously, but I don't think he's evolved away from the position regarding homosexuality, if that was your question.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, like I always say, I'm not a big fan of Louis, so, I mean, it is what it is. But, you know, the reality
you're not a big fan of what?
I'm not a big fan of Farrakhan. So.
No, neither am I. Neither am I. I mean, yeah, as a Muslim as an indigenous American or African descent, because I'm not about promoting anything that is going to be a lie to my people. And saying that I believe in my people,
we're not even
going to
get into that
because
we don't have the time for it.
But I did want to say this. My own pampered lifestyle, so to speak. You know, the number one program in the Nation of Islam is selling them newspapers, and Minister Farrakhan is able to live. I don't believe Minister Farrakhan totally depends on the Nation of Islam. I think he's educated and talented enough where he has some resources of his own. I don't know his personal business, but clearly our people are exploited through his means of calling them to his particular way in a way, I do recognize the fact that if some young brother, if they need to get off drugs, alcohol, smoking cigarettes, committing fornication, adultery, disrespecting our women, our community, if that's the way you got to do it, okay, go ahead.
Go ahead.
And eventually, hopefully, you'll be guided to something better. But if that's the short answer or the short path to that, go ahead, brother.
Hey, listen, as I would say to each his own, you know, the proof speaks for itself. The image speaks for itself. The evolving of the organization speaks for itself. Because they lost me way before they even got to Al Rod Hubbard. So, I mean, hey, the bottom line is this. We as a people have to figure out a way how we're going to move forward. How we're going to be able to debunk these mystery gods, these so-called sycophant celebrities and the rest of these degenerates that are coming into play, just like Oshie was talking about bestiality and pedophilia. Remember, at one time, the LBG, transgender, and the rest of them sycophants were deemed non-acceptable. Now look at it. They're more acceptable than the black man is. So do I see 25 years or longer bestiality and pedophilia being part of the lexicon of America? Yeah, it's on its way.
It's just a matter of
how long it's going to take for it to happen. But believe me, if we live another 25 years, one or two of them will be as acceptable as the Freak Nation is. Because you can see it already now, where every time you turn around in the newspaper, at least once a week, you talking about one of them be screwing a dog or a cat or doing something.
It's crazy. Listen, Jay, I got to get ready to go. I got to get ready for Brother Franklin Jones and the Black People Matrix. I appreciate you. It's been good talking with you today. We haven't done this in a while. And now you got a good, you met my good friend and brother, Brother Joseph, Brother Muhammad Abdullah. You know, I'm quite sure that we'll engage in conversation once again on another day. Appreciate you, Jay.
Hey, Oshie, when you get off the air, I'm going to call you, all right?
Okay. All right.
All right.
Peace. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, have a blessed day. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibifaholia. Bibifaholia means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, Bibifaholia. Peace, family.